Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Intelligence Squared U.S. debate from the Caspary Auditorium at the Rockefeller University. I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator, and the motion before us tonight is this: the art market is less ethical than the stock market. We have six panelists, all from the New York and London art world. We know that we have many members of those of the New York and London art worlds in the audience tonight as well, which makes for an even more interesting evening, because this debate actually is a contest. It is a contest of wit and logic and ideas and facts and argument and, most of all, persuasion. These six panelists are here to persuade you to their point of view on our motion, which I will state once again: the art market is less ethical than the stock market. In the course of the evening, you will hear from the panelists in three rounds. In the opening round, each side will speak alternately for 7 minutes apiece. There will be no interruptions. They have clocks that tell them when their time is up. If they exceed that time, I will step in and pull reins on them. After that, we will have about a 40-minute section where the debaters actually will debate head-to-head, and that will be mixed up somewhat with questions from me and also questions from you, the audience. And as I asked you earlier, when you ask questions, please really think in terms of crafting a question. It is a challenge. It is an artistic challenge. And the signature to a question is a question mark at the end of the statement. And finally, each of the panelists at the end of the evening will be able to sum up for 2 minutes, and at that point we will find out who the winner is. Now, what we're going to ask you to do, we're going to poll you twice during this evening. Once now, as you come in off the street, to see where you stand on the motion, and once again at the end of the evening, so that we can see how many minds were changed. So if you turn now to the keypads that are at your seats, and I explained this earlier, but for the new arrivals, there are a series of buttons. Please pay attention only to buttons number 1, 2, and 3. Those are the ones you need to register your opinion on this motion. The motion, again: the art market is less ethical than the stock market. Push number 1 if you agree, number 2 if you disagree, and number 3 if you remain undecided. If you think that you've pushed the wrong button, just correct yourself and our system will record only your last entry. And I'll give you about another 15 seconds to record that. Does anyone need more time? Okay, we're locking that down. And in a little while, I'll be reporting those early results, and then that'll tell us what the stakes are this evening. So let's let the debate begin. Our topic is: the art market is less ethical than the stock market. Arguing first for the motion is Richard Feigen, president and founder of Richard Feigen & Company Art Dealers. He opened his first gallery in New York City in 1963, which in a sense gives him more experience in the art world than perhaps anyone else in this room, time enough to know what he likes and also to decide what he does not like, particularly before us tonight in the category of ethical behavior in the art market. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Feigen.
Thank you very much, and thanks to everybody for having this forum. It's very interesting, and thanks to all of you for coming. The first premise that I want to propose is that the art market is a financial market now. It has become this, and it is a totally unregulated financial market. I will also try to define ethical. I define ethical as a protection for the investor or art collector, and unethical as efforts to deceive. I will narrowly define the stock market as publicly traded equities. Otherwise, I risk sailing off into Bernie Madoff land and uncharted waters. The art market really is divided into two parts: the private art market, meaning the galleries, and the public market, the auction houses. In the private market, there are protections of the purchaser in the form of the Uniform Commercial Code in New York and the self-policing bodies like the Art Dealers Association of America. These are not totally protective, but they serve a purpose. I'm going to focus then on the auction market. The press usually defines the art market as the auction market for contemporary art, which gets all the press, where prices have ballooned in recent years. And therefore, it has become press-worthy, because big prices make for press. In the past few years, there has been rampant speculation. Until the middle 90s, a work that appeared at auction, if it reappeared within 5 years, it would be virtually unsaleable. And now works appear almost immediately after being purchased, or at least they did until the recent unpleasantness in the contemporary market starting in November. And because there's a new wave of speculators at each auction. This all really began in the middle 80s when art became monetized by the press and the financial institutions into a financial market. Sotheby's launched a financial services arm, Citibank, an art advisory department, and so on. Banks lent money on art, and auction houses lent money to buy art. Sotheby's chairman went to jail for colluding with Christie's on auction commissions. Art had become a serious financial asset. Whereas before the 80s, the market was tiny, it now became global. Thousands of people became involved. Billions of dollars changed hands. But except for foreign governments claiming repatriation of antiquities and Holocaust restitutions, and despite the sums of money involved and vast numbers of participants, our government seems to treat art as frivolous, as a luxury market, with no regulation or oversight. As just one example, in the Bush administration tax code, when the capital gains tax was reduced from 28% to 15%, art remained at 28%, apparently because it was treated by the government as a luxury, not an asset class. The stock markets are highly regulated by law. There are also protections for individuals who trade in the market through fiduciaries, mutual funds, and so on. Regulation came about as a protection for individual investors. The art market, on the other hand, is totally unregulated. Things occur, particularly in the auction market, that are deliberately contrived to deceive the unsophisticated individual, and that would be subject to criminal penalties in the stock market. The most universally encountered is chandelier bidding, which means fake bids to entice bidders into competition. Whereas regulations exist in the stock market to provide transparency, chandelier bidding is specifically designed to deceive, to imply that there is competition when there isn't any. Novice buyers usually enter the market through auctions because they have no other way to establish values. Unlike securities, there are no two works of art that are identical or are in the same condition or have the same credentials. The only source of price comparison is auction databases, but again, comparisons are flawed. The novice auction bidder believes his only exposure is his incremental bid. He assumes that the underbid represents a willing and able competitor. But what if there wasn't any underbidder? What if the bid was a phantom, a chandelier bid? When some years ago the issue of chandelier bidding was raised in New York's the Consumer Affairs Department, the auctioneers cried that to eliminate it would take the drama out of auctions, and they threatened to quit New York City. When I was quoted as saying that when I want drama, I go to Broadway, I was called a horse's butt. I changed that word because my wife wouldn't let me, or somebody in my office wouldn't let me use it. The only result of the city inquiry was that the auctioneers were forced to identify items in which they have a financial interest or that are guaranteed, or most recently on which there are irrevocable bids, identified by minuscule symbols virtually invisible or incomprehensible to all but professionals. Otherwise, the auctioneers prevailed with their deceptive practices. In a addition, the auction catalog disclaimers make it basically caveat emptor as far as authenticity and condition are concerned. In the private gallery market, the invoice establishes the guarantee by law. The real reason for the auctioneer's ethical ambivalence is the dramatic shift in role over the last 40 years from agent for the buyer, then as demand started exceeding supply, first as agent for both buyers and sellers, and then primarily for the sellers, the buyer paying almost all of the commission. Guarantees and irrevocable bids followed swiftly as further enticements to sellers. But the auctioneer's role remained ambiguous. The auctioneer was now wearing at least two invisible hats, and when he had an equity in the object, three.
Richard, I have to interrupt you. Your time is up. Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Feigen. Our next debater has arguably already earned his place in art history. Chuck Close's paintings are in the collections of the National Gallery of Art in Washington, the Tate in London, the Museum of Modern Art here in New York. And while he has been known to spend months, even more than a year, on a single painting, tonight we are giving him minutes to argue against the motion that the art market is less ethical than the stock market.
Well, it hardly it doesn't seem like we have to do much, given what's happened recently. But my argument is a little different. I don't think that the art market is determined, or the value of art is determined by money at all. And I don't think that the value of art is measured in that way. If you look at the turn of the century, Bouguereau sold for far more than any other artist in what would be, in today's terms, millions of dollars. And the artists that we now know and love, the Impressionists, Post-Impressionists, couldn't sell their work at all. So I question whether sales really is a barometer of value, and whether ethics has anything to do with how that work is marketed. We have examples of the work being marketed extremely well with great ethics, and we have examples of it being done in a somewhat sleazier fashion. I would say that art is not a business. Certainly the making of art is not a business. My good friend Joe Zucker, who is a great painter, his father was a junk dealer, a scrap metal dealer in Chicago. When he looked at Joe's studio and saw the racks full of unsold paintings, he said, "You can't afford to make any more paintings until you get rid of some of your inventory." If any of us made work for that kind of reason, you wonder where we would be. I remember at Lee Marvin in The Ship of Fools was a washed-up baseball player, and he's standing at the bar talking to an artist. And because he isn't being paid, he doesn't play baseball anymore. And the artist is trying to explain to him why he has to have an occupation to support his profession. And that's really where the art world is at. Most people, most artists, make this work, whether anybody wants it at all, makes it year in and year out with little visibility, no critical attention, and little financial support. Most art is by nature mediocre. There are no undiscovered geniuses. Take my word, there are no undiscovered geniuses. There are many undiscovered competent artists, just as competent as the artists who are famous and we all know. There are no charlatans. If somebody wanted to be a charlatan, the last thing they would do is go into art. There are many other ways, and I think the financial market is obviously a much better place to be a charlatan than being an artist. If you're lucky enough to find a dealer, the artist and the dealer relationship is the heart and soul of the art world. It is a marriage. Like many marriages, some don't last forever, and there may even be some cheating from time to time. But it is a marriage, because this is where the rubber meets the road when it comes to art and how it is offered to the public. There are ups and downs. Things are in fashion or out, hot or not. And if you don't understand the cyclical nature of the art world, you're in for a lot of pain. Dave Hickey said in a really wonderful article in Art in America this month, at one time, a consensus of professional respect would carry an artist through times of no money better than money would carry an artist through times of no professional respect. A few museum shows and a nice catalog essay during a lull meant that your prices would still be there when fashion changed and the money came back. He went on to say that works of art have no intrinsic value. All their value is extrinsic, is invested from without and over a period of time. Damien Hirst's jewel-encrusted skull has hundreds of thousands of dollars, or maybe millions, I don't know, of diamonds in it. It did not make that piece any more valuable than any other work of his, just because it had inherent value. Ooh, I got 2 minutes, Jesus Christ. So who are the deciders? Some are forces for good. I'm borrowing a phrase from Bush on purpose. Who are the deciders? Some of those deciders are forces for good, and some are forces for evil. I'm not even going to get into it. I'll do this in my closing remarks.
Do you want to yield the rest of your time?
I got 2 minutes. No, 1 minute. I would just repeat that the most important thing is the value that art is a meritocracy. It is a meritocracy because the final arbiters of what is important are other artists. All the hype, all the spin, all the efforts to construct a career out of thin air, all the efforts to manipulate the market notwithstanding, over the long haul, if you don't have the respect of other artists, it will disappear and it will not stand the test of time. So if we're looking at short-term investment, perhaps it can be manipulated and perhaps it's not always the most perfectly run organization opportunity. But over the long haul, it's left up to other artists, and I think that's what finally determines the value in art.
Thank you, Chuck Close. Our next debater, Michael Hugh Williams, is founder of the Albion Gallery, located in London and New York. And as we are debating here, London is snowed in. Both runways at Heathrow are shut down. And somehow, Michael managed to get what might have been the last plane out. He stepped off of it about 3 hours ago. So he obviously wanted to argue tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Hugh Williams.
Thank you. I'm going to make some points to support what Richard's already begun on our behalf. And these will be made more in the way that a drunk might use a lamppost in support rather than illumination. However, an early statement from 1932, pre-regulation of the stock market, which FDR managed importantly to begin over here, began with the remarks that it was needed because of shocking disclosures of low standards in high places. This possibly is something that could be applied to the art market, I fear. The stock market in London has a dictum. The dictum is meum dictum pactum. This means my word is my bond. And it is one of the important maxims in the art world, but unfortunately it is not one that necessarily is worth banking upon. I'm going to illustrate three reasons why the motion, the art market is less ethical than the stock market, for me holds water. The first is that there is no real regulation. The second, that there is no transparency in the market. And the third, that there are absolutely no barriers to entry. The first no real regulation. Let me explain by telling you a story against myself. In 1989, 1990, it's a long time ago, I was in short trousers. I had a gallery in London already. I came to London, to New York, on the day of one of the big auctions, and I made a deal with an art dealer here in New York, somebody who's extremely prominent to this day, to buy 8 paintings by the German painter George Baselitz, an artist who I still greatly admire. And I agreed to buy these pictures for $2.4 million, which at the time seemed an extraordinary amount of money to me. I think I was 24 years old at the time. And I left the gallery of this man I'd made the deal with, and I waited, because there was one similar painting that night in auction in New York, and the painting made $800,000. I went to bed that night feeling very clever. The next morning, I got a telephone call from the dealer who told me that the deal did not stand and that he was going to walk away from it. And, of course, I was outraged. But under the UCC regulations, anything that is not written on paper and is a transaction above $500 is not enforceable. Clearly here, ethics and the law were not working hand in hand. Ethically, I felt he was doing something that was appalling. Legally, he was absolutely right. He could do it. That illustrates my first point, that there is no real regulation. The second point, that there is no transparency in the market, has been touched upon by Richard in his remarks about the auction houses and the creation of rings. Rings are relatively simple to create. It needs a group of people who stand outside the framework of the auction houses, and they decide to promote an artist. It's very easily done with a young artist, and I can think of one at the moment in the Middle East who is an interesting young painter whose work has rocketed in price from tens of thousands of dollars to hundreds of thousands of dollars in the space of less than 2 years. A group of people bought a lot of pictures. They each owned individually a group of pictures, and they started to put these pictures into auction. They then go to the auctions. They get groups of people to bid them up, and thereby they feather their own nests. And this draws attention to the press. The press pay attention to the artist, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that this artist starts to go up in value, and by a process of osmosis, the ring benefit from the auction house activity that they've begun. This is not transparent to the outside viewer, but to art world professionals, it is quite obvious when this is happening. The last point, and possibly the most important point, is that unlike the stock market, there are no barriers to entry. To become an art dealer, you need to have a pulse. You need to be able to count, and probably you need 2 eyes in your head. But beyond that, anybody can be and call themselves an art dealer. There was an extraordinary scenario that took place here, predominantly here in New York, with an art dealer, so-called, called Michael Cohen. Some of you may know about this, but I'm going to use him as an example of an extraordinary situation where he began to trade in commodities and in the stock market and ran into a lot of financial trouble. This was not his business. This is what he was making money doing on the side. But he realized that he could solve his problems where there was an absolute call on his money at 30 days, and he had to deliver by using other people's paintings as collateral. Some of them he parked even in the auction houses. His level of chutzpah has to be seen to be believed. He actually managed to sell a Titian that was on the wall of the Met. In any case, this gentleman eventually did become unseated, and he has disappeared, last sighted in Brazil. And if anybody can help us out with his whereabouts, Jerry Saltz, our resident investigative journalist, would love to write a story all about it. I use him as an example. There are very clear demands placed upon people who go into the stock market. The stock market is regulated. These individuals are fingerprinted. They are members of a licensed body of people who are allowed to trade. their backgrounds are heavily investigated before they begin. This is not the case with the art world. And for these three reasons, there is no regulation, no transparency, and no barriers to entry. These are the reasons that I believe absolutely that the motion, the art market is less ethical than the stock market, cannot be disputed.
Thank you. Michael Hugh Williams. Amy Capilazzo is Deputy Chairman and International Co-Head of Postwar and Contemporary Art at Christie's, and she became famous for a quote, something she said a year or two back when describing a rather frothy art market. She said, "After you have a fourth home and a Gulfstream jet, what else is there?" It has been picked up and repeated and repeated and repeated, and our next debater is Amy Capilazzo.
Thank you, John. Well, this is such a juicy topic. I really don't even know where to begin. My notes feel, my head is flooding with all sorts of other ideas besides these that I've put before myself on these pieces of paper today. Certainly, I'd like to just say that when you're on a panel, it's much more interesting to sit on one than sit through one. So I will, work very hard to play to type and make it lively and interesting. And there's been many swipes against auction house people tonight. And as I am the auction house person on this panel, I will get to sort of support and defend the position in place of the auction house as sort of an ethical player. But in reading the proposition over and over again, the art market is less ethical than the stock market. Of course, I had to read this multiple times, and I had to analyze every word. Certainly, colonizing the word ethical will help make you the winner tonight. And something ethical is described as proper conduct and good living. An essential aspect of ethics is the concept of the life worth living, that each of us aspires to this quality of life and aspires to have the kind of life that allows us to sleep at night and live an ethical, good life that makes it all worth living. A few things basically need to be established here. Art is not a pure commodity. It's not an ordinary commodity. While it certainly is bought and sold and traded, the motivations for the place of art in our society, the motivations for its existence and everyone who plays within the game of the art world are incredibly conflicting, in fact. So my premise depends on the concept that the art market does not exist without the art world, that, in fact, the art world adds hugely to the conscience of the art market. What do I mean by the art world? I mean the entire museum profession, critics, curators, conservators, other sorts of people in the cultural production business, writers, graphic designers who work with artists, etc. Art is valuable emotionally, intellectually, historically, in a way that other commodities are not inherently. The motivations for becoming part of the art world are too multiple and varied. The rewards are too varied among the various groups. An artist becomes part of the art world for a completely different set of reasons than a dealer does, than a critic does. So while there is, in the art world, there are too many different rewards. The reward structure is fractured and varied, whereas in the stock market, presumably there is a singular reward, which is financial compensation. Within that, there is not really an ability for ethical behavior it's hard to get into ethical run-ins because everybody has a completely different system of reward and a completely different ethic reason for existing within that. Part of what I put forth here is that art is a bit like physics. It can exist both as wave and as particle. So it is at once something that is bought, sold, traded as a commodity, or as something like a commodity, and it exists in this sort of higher plane of emotional, intellectual, historical, and cultural meaning and cultural relevance. I believe that there's something that exists in the art world, that exists in the art market, that makes it completely different from the stock market, and that is something that I would call pressure of a common pool, which is a sort of basic economics 101 theory and idea that things that are precious in the public domain that no one exactly owns, let's say like aquifers, groundwater, forests, fisheries, things of this kind, are in fact, there's a kind of rule of conduct about how people engage within them, which is essentially you know, more or less ethical, people who do not behave well within these common public treasures are in fact outliers or criminals and are really quickly rooted out, and that those of us who participate in this pressure of a common pool participate ethically and carefully. I believe works of art are something that give us tremendous pleasure. They really, you know, all the beautiful platitudes about feeding our soul and carrying us through difficult times, all of this is entirely true, particularly now, and that we all treat works of art in the same coveted fashion with care, respect, and preciousness that works of art deserve. If you break these rules of engagement, you are a criminal or an outlier. People who know art, people who collect it, artists who make it, collectors who very much covet it, really know that they are only temporary custodians of works of art. It's kind of like being a foster parent. You don't really own these works of art. You just take care of them for a while because they're supposed to outlive you, and you're supposed to pass them on to someone else. So as long as that is the ethos that surrounds a work of art, how this object is understood in the world and in the marketplace will always be different than something that trades as pure commodity. So, with the position that the art market is less ethical than the stock market, the art world is by far more ethical than the stock market. It has a conflicting set of, it has a very varied and various numerous reward system among its various participants, as opposed to the singularity of money that comes from the stock market. And the actual object traded is very different than a share of stock in all of its principles, properties, ideas, and values. And that is why I am arguing against this proposition tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy Capolazzo. So I just want to remind you where we are in the evening. We are now, at this point, halfway through our opening round. I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator, and this is Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. We have six panelists, three who are arguing for and three against this proposition. The art market is less ethical than the stock market. And now we are going to move on. Our next panelist will be arguing for the motion, the art market is less ethical than the stock market. Adam Lindemann is one of the world's leading collectors of contemporary art. He likes to share what he knows. He's written essentially a buyer's guide to collectors, and he also likes to buy what he likes. He calls himself a consumptaholic. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Lindemann.
Thanks so much. I just wanted to remind you all that March 17th is Blame Washington More Than Wall Street. I do blame Washington. April 21, it's wrong to pay for sex. I do think it's wrong to pay for sex, unless you get a good deal. And May 12th, diplomacy with Iran is going nowhere, and it is. So that gives you a hint of where I stand here. I'm here to basically argue the point that the art market is less ethical than the stock market, which it is. I want to start off by reminding you all what ethical actually means, because I wasn't even sure what it meant when I thought about it. Ethical means being in accordance with the rules or standards for right conduct. Ethics means this is correct and right conduct and practice. The standards of a profession, in this instance, the standards of the profession of the art dealer we're talking about. An example here is it was not considered ethical for physicians to advertise. It is not ethical for physicians to advertise. I thought, well, why can't physicians advertise if they're good? And the reason is physicians are there to help people. Physicians are supposed to help you with your health, and therefore it's not really a business, just like the art market is not really a business. But then how can it be a market and not be a business? We get into this whole ethical question about art and the market. These two things are really at juggerheads in a way. And I thought, do art dealers advertise? Because it would not be appropriate for physicians to advertise. Do art dealers advertise? And I thought, every art dealer I know advertises heavily. As a matter of fact, auction houses advertise. Everyone advertises. And therefore, it immediately made me feel, well, perhaps advertising is a sign that this is a business and not simply about ethics and proper conduct. Now, in terms of the stock market, the SEC regulates public companies. And the reason for that is really to protect the public. If it weren't for protecting the public, in fact, the government would let everyone do whatever they wanted to with public companies, private companies, and whatnot. We have many, many rules and regulations for the financial markets. And of course, more rules to break is what many people will think, or more rules to skirt, but the reality is those rules are there. Now, on the other hand, we have works of art which are inherently unique. Each work of art is quite different. Even if there is a Degas which sold today for $19 million, that Degas is one of, I believe, 20 that he made, and that particular Degas was cast after his death. That's what we call a posthumous cast. So, in my view, that Degas is quite different from a cast that Degas made during his lifetime. How could we regulate Degas' danseuses, even if two are exactly the same? The skirt is going to be slightly different. The patina was slightly different. One of them got dropped on the floor and restored. The other one didn't. So therefore, since art is inherently, each work of art is inherently unique, it's extremely difficult to regulate. So I was trying to imagine how we would regulate the art world in order to make it truly ethical. And I was thinking we would have to create something called the AEC, as opposed to the SEC. We would have the AEC, which is the Art Exchange Commission. This would be a counterpart to the SEC, perhaps a subdivision, in which case we could go after Madoff, and we could also go after art dealers who have sold things that are not correct. I think that that whole idea of regulating the art world is, in and of itself, impossible. And so then I thought, well, what are these standards for proper conduct? How can we be proper? How can we be ethical in the art market? And I quickly thought of six fast reasons which make it difficult to ensure that every trade in the art market will be ethical. Of course, many of the dealers and many of the people at the auction houses and many of the artists are my dear friends, and I don't mean to say that any of them are unethical. My point is rather that the art market itself is ripe for unethical behavior. That doesn't mean that the participants in it are unethical. My personal feeling is that the people in the art world that I know are the most wonderful and ethical people I know in any environment, in any business. But that being said, the entire market is ripe for anything to happen. For example, stocks, when stocks trade, you pay a commission. You can pay between 1 and 15 cents. You like the guy, you pay 15 cents. He's giving you good information. You can pay 50 cents. You can give him a dollar. You can trade with Charles Schwab. It's a penny a share. When you're buying a work of art, you have no idea what that real commission is. The art market is all fair game. It's caveat emptor. Unless you're going in with a dealer that you know, or a work of art that you know, or you have a consultant who you trust, you have no idea what the commission is. You don't know if it's 10%, 15%. Yes, common practice is 10%. Common practice in the art world, 10% commission. My question to you is, 10% of what? The next point, which I think is pretty much going to blow this up, is the insider trading. Now, you know that insider trading is wrong when you're trading public securities. Matter of fact, insider trading is wrong when you're trading bonds, when you're trading stocks. Now, you know, it's illegal on Wall Street, and the reality is, in the art market, we live on inside information. I mean, the whole art market is based on inside information. I mean, that's the whole idea of art. You know, there are the insiders, and then there are the outsiders. Yes, there's the concept that art is for everyone, and art will transcend, you know, and we all want that feeling. I mean, certainly we want the art that's going to speak to everyone. However, the reality is, when you're actually buying art, when you're a collector, when you're reaching into your pocket and you need to spend money, you want to know everything. At least I do. It's not only about love. Of course I love, but I can't buy everything in the world. So I need to choose what I'm going to do with my resources, and I want to have all that information, especially the inside information that I know that dealer has. Another type of inside information would be if a young artist is going to a bigger gallery. This is a critical thing to know. The other thing is opportunities for currency exchanges. Geographic. A painting in one country is worth less than a painting in another country. Does that make dealers unethical? Absolutely not. But the whole system is ripe for anything to happen, and that's the beauty of art and the art market.
Thank you, Adam Lindemann. Well, we felt we needed an art critic in the debate tonight, and we are fortunate to have Jerry Saltz, who in Art Review's 2008 Power 100 list was ranked number 79. And his wife, Roberta Smith of the New York Times, their art critic, was ranked number 71. Jerry has said, New York City is not the center of the art world anymore, but it is the trading floor. Do you recall that?
Yes.
I hope you stand by it as you argue against the motion. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Saltz.
Thank you. Thank you. First, I want to say art is not optional. It's always been here since the beginning. It has never gone away. It's not going away, okay? It isn't just a decorative hedge that grows in front of a market or in front of industry or philosophy. Art is a necessity, okay? It changes the world. It won't reduce the incidence of AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa, but it does change the world incrementally and or by osmosis, okay? So when you keep talking about the market, I want to say to my friends on the other side that almost there's a self-hating thing to your argument to me, because you are representatives of the market. And I have to remind you, first of all, 1% of 1% of 1% of 1% of artists actually make money. And even they barely do, and usually only for a very short time. So while, and look at their clothes are pretty good. And I'm not against, Mr. Feigen just sold a painting for $12 million. That's great, yesterday, and I think you deserve that. There's nothing wrong with that. But when we're standing here talking about, you know, secrecy and manipulation instead of sorcery or prestidigitation, or you're talking about you're upset because we're not regulated. I don't want us ever to be regulated. This is the art world, people. Am I yelling? If this were the art industry, that side would be right. But this is the art world, and a world is a place that has a vision, that has problems. The market is a place, obviously, that people exhibit junkie-like behavior. Millionaires try to enter art history by spending a lot of money. Sometimes the market's like a friendly Labrador that kind of slobbers all over you, and it's very annoying, but you can't somehow ignore it. I'm not denying that the market is a combination of hundreds of things, be it greed, luck, research, a great eye. And I do know one great art dealer in Germany, Johann Koning, with only one eye. And he can only see about 10% with that eye. And he is one of the best dealers in the world. Did I just argue against our side? This is the art world. It isn't the art industry. They are appealing, and I like them, you know, I see them everywhere, to the cynical side of your nature. I'm being honest with you. The part that goes, yeah, yeah, it's all a dirty deal, and everybody's bad. But let me tell you something. Everybody isn't bad. Most people, certainly, they're not. But that's a different. Art dealers, a lot of them are missing the same chromosome, you know, and it's very annoying. But they create worlds, and they pay the bills. They deal with artists. They deal with critics. They deal with collectors. They deal with plumbers. They do a lot. And if they don't sell 10 shows in a row, they will close. There shouldn't be regulation. There shouldn't. And you complain because anyone can enter? I'm going to be honest. I have no degrees at all. I am so lucky to be here, and I think about it all day, every day. That I'm, you know how I got in the art world? I went like this. I'm in the art world. And they said, what are you? And I went, I'll be a critic. And that's how I did what I'm doing. We all are making this up out of ourselves, just like you. To be perfectly honest, we're all learning on the job. Everybody's learning on the job. All the time. Rules, you want to start the AEC? No, no, no. I mean, no offense, I love these people, but I hate these ideas. Sorry. We're not talking about ethics. The art world is ethical, it's not ethical. It's this, it's that. It doesn't compare. It's not a $15 billion bubble anywhere, for God's sake. It's not nuclear secrets that are being leaked. Yes, these guys do know how the secrets are done. And I love that they do, and I don't even hate them for it. I think, fine, that's part of it. That's part of their game. But we're not talking about ethics. We're talking about aesthetics. Aesthetics is the type of thinking and judgment that we use in the art world. And yes, Damien Hirst's skull cost $100 million. It was very publicly that he was one of the owners of it. Fine, whatever. But there's also the lifestyles of the poor and famous. Vito Acconci right now is standing around going, I still have no money. You know, Adrian Piper, I'm naming names you might not know. The point I guess I'm trying to make is the art world will work the way it works. It's time to rethink it. This is true, because a lot of the ideas they're talking about, and I don't say this about them, but seem very, very yesterday, in a time long, long ago. And we were very lucky to have this very temporary bubble where 1% of blah, blah, blah made money, and that's great. I want more artists to make more money, so they don't have to have dark nights of the soul at their jobs for 40 hours. Now they are. And so are you, and so are they. We're going to have to worry a little bit more. But I think you just have to let the art world be what it is. The rethinking of it has to be, look at the huge white cubes that we now have. Look, that they may not be enhancing the journeys to art, but may have become content in themselves. The same way that the talk about the market hollows out art. It takes your eyes off the prize, the way Amy and Chuck were talking about, and you're stuck talking about a red herring, something that, to be perfectly honest, not one person in this room, not them, got into the art world to do. Each one of them is here because they love art. So, peace and love.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry Saltz. That concludes the opening statements for our debate. Can we have a round of applause for all of our panelists? When you all arrived for the debate, we asked you to vote your opinion on our motion, and I'm going to share the results with you now. To restate our motion, it is the art market is less ethical than the stock market. You all voted before the debate, and the results are very evenly split. 32% agree with the motion, 30% disagree, and 38% are undecided.
Wait, four means what?
Four means I came in late.
Okay.
This is the for side.
Right.
And that's the against
okay.
side.
And how swing voters.
The way that we will judge the winner at the end of the evening is we look at whose numbers move by a larger percentage. So the fact that it's quite evenly split makes this a pretty good horse race at this point. But at the end of the evening, we want to see who actually has a larger number and or who has dropped numbers. Now we're going to move into the second section of the evening, and that's where the debaters can talk directly to one another. You'll be involved as audience members. I want to remind all of you that the tone of this part of the debate can be quite informal. You don't need me to be a traffic cop. I will only get involved and pull you back if there's a terrible pile on and everyone talking at once. But feel free to interrupt each other, to support each other. It's your debate, this part of the evening. But I want to start it off by asking Michael Hugh Williams, who heard the other side essentially argue that art is not like other stuff that can be regulated. It's closer to love, and you can't regulate love or romance. If you take the basic rule, buyer beware, whatever happened to that rule, and why does that simply not apply? Why doesn't that take care of all problems?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that. So I'm going to say something completely different. I'm going to say...
You could be in politics with that.
I'm not going to answer the question at all. I'm going to say that actually I wanted to agree with Jerry, and I wanted to say that he's absolutely right, that we're all in this for the same reason. But actually tonight, we're here to debate a very specific motion, which has nothing to do with the fact that we are all involved with art because we love it and because it's our lives and because we are not able to do anything else, speaking from my own point of view. I had to invent a job for myself because nobody else would have me. But actually, we're here because we love art, because it drives us, because it thrills us, and because the exciting thing about the art world and the people that make it is that it is a... I always think of it as a running race where the great artists pass the baton from one to the other, and the really great artists get to carry it forward. And for me, seeing those artists and trying to help them... Trying to help them go forward... Is a byproduct of what we do, and as a gallery, yes, we sell the work, but also we sometimes have to help them create the work. And by the way, Jerry, in case you didn't realize, I look after Vito Acconci, and he's a wonderful artist.
I just like
he's
to say,
doing wonderful things.
Michael, you sort of made a case in favor of regulation being something that you know normatively affects, you know, that inspires ethical behavior. I mean, I would like to know. I do not think regulation ensures ethical behavior at all. Certainly we've seen in the stock market that lots of regulation certainly doesn't ensure ethical behavior. The violations are tremendous. In fact, this idea of you know the pressure of a common pool or the idea that everybody who's part of the art world, even part of the art market, signs up for the full ethos here that you love, covet, and take care of the art. And in fact, if people in the art, you know, even the most highly compensated people in the art world could make more if they chose a different profession. We all know that. So the reward system is obviously other, as we've well established.
I think there's two really important points. First of all, we're not actually talking about money here. We're talking about ethics. And we're talking about whether a market is ethical, not about whether people make lots of money or don't make lots of money. We're just talking about ethics.
But whether does regulation one market or another ensure market ethical is behavior? Ethical.
And the other thing I think is really important to understand is that I'm not asking for regulation in the market. I know that that won't happen. And I, yes, okay, mea culpa, I am a cannibal. I'm eating my own, as it were. I'm Jonathan Swift's modest proposal. I'm suggesting that we eat our own children through the market. But actually, I'm a great devotee of the market. I think that its inconsistencies, like Adam, are one of the great attractions of the market. And the fact that nothing is ever the same yesterday as it will be tomorrow is one of the extraordinary things about the art world.
But
Jerry
to
Saltz.
Say that the art market is inconsistent, I think that's built into it. But inconsistent doesn't ipso facto mean it's unethical from here down to there. Of course, there are going to be instances of people trying to manipulate any market to try to make money. You're saying that it is an unethical thing. That
no,
is
we're
your
not,
argument.
We're not, Jerry, sorry. What we're saying here is that, and if you look at the debate motion again, we are saying that it is more unethical than the stock market. That's what we're debating.
And it's done more damage, is what you're saying, than the stock market.
I'm not debating whether it's done damage or not. I'm simply debating the point that...
But then why be in it?
Because...
Richard Feigen. Richard Feigen, please.
In all deference to Jerry, the subject here is not the art world, which I happen not to particularly like, because people make a...
Why?
Why
don't you like the art
world? Because people run around using it like they use fancy Bentleys and things like that.
Well, you drive that, and they don't drive it out there, I'm telling you.
Look, we're talking about a market. A market is a financial vehicle. In all deference to Chuck, I couldn't agree more, but the subject here is not art. There is
yes,
no more
it is.
Yeah, but the art market contains many externalities.
There is more passionate.
Many externalities.
There's no one more passionate about art, thank you very much, than myself. And I'd much rather buy
prove it
than sell it. Prove it.
Richard.
Oh, come on.
You're
listen,
Chuck
Close.
Everybody knows
you're,
I'd rather be a collector than a dealer anyway. But the point is that we're talking about the art market. And the market, and I'm saying that art has become a financial market. I don't like it. It makes
but it's
my
been
life
a financial
difficult
market since the Renaissance.
Let's bring in Chuck
Richard.
Close. Chuck Close.
Yeah, you're primarily a secondary market dealer, which means that you try to buy low and sell high. Or like a real estate agent, you take things on commission and you hope to sell them and collect a commission on that sale. That's really not some, that's to me not a very important relationship to the art world. Certainly not to, not to artists. You might be for dead artists or estates, but I'd like to talk about the real, what I think is a real ethical bond between the primary art dealer, who represents artists, who believe in that artist, who take a risk on that artist, and put that work out there, and make that work available. I was a kid from a mill town in the state of Washington. I couldn't believe when I got to New York, and there was this incredible smorgasbord of art for me to look at that was given to me free of charge by galleries. I could go in, I could look at this work. I was never going to buy this stuff. This is a real service that the dealer provides, and they make that artist's work available to collectors. And there are, at first I didn't want to meet a collector of mine, because what if he or she was a jerk, and then I'd say, oh my God, that jerk owns my work. So I tried not to meet them. And then I found, and I found out that really, truly wonderful people out there buy art, and they give it to museums, and they make it available to other people. If it weren't really philanthropic people, who are a real asset to the art world, and this commerce that goes back and forth, there are people who are. Speculators. I mean, I sold, I was first an advisor to Charles Saatchi when he was first buying art. I told him which pieces by which artist he ought to buy it, and he bought one of my pieces. I knew right away never to sell another work of art to this guy. I knew he was a speculator. He liked to make and destroy careers. And
Chuck, are you switching to the other side of the argument then?
No, I'm not. I'm talking about the primary role that a gallery plays in an artist's career, putting that work forward, and the responsibility. I hate to see them slammed. I hate them talked about as if they were selling hog futures. It's another kind of business. And we, those of us who make art, we appreciate the truly wonderful collectors who are out there. Where would museums be without collectors giving their work to these museums? This is a wonderful part of how the art world works.
Chuck, it's not even the trading's model.
Let me pause the debate for a second. I just want to start the process of taking audience questions, and then you can resume that moment. I just want to see if any hands are up as we bring up the lights. And also, I want to remind you that we're delighted to hear from you. I feel like you're sitting on your hands a little bit tonight. Feel free to speak out. So we have a question down here in the front row. And if we move the mic down, we'll come to you in just a second, sir, as we continue the conversation. Richard Feigen, you were about to speak.
Well, Chuck, you are one of those important contemporary artists whose work sells in the seven figures, and there's a waiting list for it. Imagine some kid who can't get a gallery, where the rents are so high that the gallery can't even show the work. I tried. I represented artists
in the
primary market.
Believe me, I know more of them than you know.
Chuck, let me tell you. I tried it, and I'm no good at promotion, the touting, and all that publicity and the politics that go into making an artist successful. So I ran around feeling responsible and guilty, all right, because I couldn't do it. I don't know how to do it.
That's not why you didn't do it. The reason you didn't do it is because you had a gift for what you are doing. You're not involved with the contemporary art world because it wasn't the first language that you really were
Jerry,
meant to
I
speak.
Jerry, I showed contemporary artists in Chicago when...
I worked for you when I was 21. On Michigan Avenue. I was there.
Well, right look.
620 Michigan.
Right now, it's all about... It's a Charles Saatchi's feeding into
no,
Larry
Gagosian's,
into the
that.
Auction houses.
You're
the whole
only
thing
looking
is about
at
touting.
One tiny, tiny, tiny sliver of it and saying that's the whole thing from top to bottom, that it's the core. So it's become that for you guys.
I didn't say
even
top to
bottom. Even in the auction house, it's not that way. I mean, even sitting in it, it's not that way.
Auction houses won't take anything for sale unless it costs a certain huge sum of money. They won't even accept it in an auction.
Adam Lindman, you said Adam.
I don't
that
think that's
we
true.
We sell things all day for $1,000.
Adam Lindman argued that the market is ripe for unethical
behavior, but you didn't really gauge whether you think there actually is a lot of unethical behavior going on. You didn't say one way or the other. And it seems to me relevant to this topic, whether we're talking about a few bad apples or are we talking about large-scale unethical behavior? And I want to ask your side. If it's a few bad apples, then we're not talking about a huge problem. But is it bigger than that?
It seems to me that the question becomes, you know, is the proposition correct in a systemic definition, or is it correct in practice? Meaning, is the system that is the art market, the unregulated art market, inherently more open to unethical behavior than the regulated market? Now, your question is, in practice,
right,
is the art market actually unethical? And I have tremendous respect for the other side here. Speaking of ethics, I think that had I chosen the other side, I wouldn't have made the panel because they had more people on that side than this one. So I sensed that there was a spot for me over here, and I'm arguing this side, which has a lot to do about art and the art market. You know, you have to feel your way through. That being said, the people that I deal with are the people that I think are ethical. I choose people that I have a relationship with, that are either my friends or I have a good feeling about them. And do things happen? Of course, everything happens.
Right.
In this world, anything can happen. That being said, our side has definitely we're going downhill here in the sense that we don't have any rules in the art market. And sort of, whereas the public is protected by the SEC, as we were saying, perhaps imperfectly so, but that's the effort. The public can enjoy the art world that Jerry Saltz has laid out for us and certainly should support the art world that Chuck Close has laid out for us, and I do feel very strongly that way. Nonetheless, there are no rules. There's no inherent value. I mean, the other side literally said, let me see here, there is no intrinsic value, only extrinsic value. That's Chuck Close's word. So if there is no intrinsic value, then it's ripe for unethical behavior.
Well, let me turn to your teammate, Michael Hugh Williams. And Michael, if you can approach your microphone a little bit, I got a signal that the radio is having a little bit of difficulty because of the distance. Are there a lot of unethical players, and a lot of unethical players in the art market, or only a few? Or do you not know because nobody knows?
I'm sure there may be, but I'm sure I don't know them. I think your question is an interesting one, but it actually has no bearing on the motion that we're discussing here, because this motion is a purely hypothetical motion. So I'm going to bring this back, and I'm going to say, and I'm going to agree.
You really don't like to answer direct questions, do you?
Now I'm completely lost. I think that the art market is open for manipulation because it's unregulated. I think it is unregulated because historically it's found its own way of operating because it's just simply actually not possible to regulate this market. And it would be a ghastly thing if it ever could be regulated. A lot of the excitement and fun would go out of it. So to answer your question, do I know a lot of bad apples in the art market? No. But the art market, when we have instances of things going wrong and manipulations and unethical behavior, attracts a huge amount of attention, a disproportionate amount of attention, because the art market is very exciting. It is very well reported. It always has been. Because it is also the cradle of... It's an expression of humanity. It's an expression of something that is above the humdrum essence of daily life. It's something that, when it is truly great, it takes us into another realm, into a realm that hopefully will have it will have cultural credibility for years and decades and centuries to come.
Let's take a question from the front row, sir.
Well, we've heard tonight that the artist and the primary dealer at the foundation of the art market, along with the collector. But we haven't, and we've heard how secondary dealers and groups of collectors can manipulate the market. But I'm wondering, how does the art critic fit into this? Do the Clement Greenbergs of the world manipulate the art market, the Jerry Saltzes of the world? Where does the critic fit?
That's a really good question. I think we're really, once upon a time, the Clement Greenbergs of the art world did, and they were able to manipulate taste, and therefore the market. That time, luckily, is long, long gone. And that now I can like this, another critic can like that, Michael Wilson can like this. I'm looking at art critics in the room. And it really, we don't have that kind of sway. I can say that Damien Hirst's recent paintings were absolutely generic 40th generation photorealist paintings, which I did write. And do you know how many he sold? All of them. And I've done that a lot. And just to show you the other side, oh, well, he's just saying he's being... I've written that certain young artists are very, very good. And it won't do anything. It has to be there. I don't know what it is, you know. If you know, let me know.
Okay, we're taking questions from the audience.
John Donvan. Can I go another direction
I just need to do this little piece of radio, and then I'll come right to you, Michael. I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator, and this is Intelligence Squared US, Oxford-style debating. We have six panelists, three for and three against this proposition. The art market is less ethical than the stock market. We're returning to our debate with Michael Hugh Williams.
I just wanted to take you a slightly different direction. If you go back nearly 100 years and you think of not an art critic, but a very influential art historian, Bernard Berenson, who was in cahoots with Duveen, here you have an incredibly powerful manipulation which subsequently many other art historians have found to be entirely unethical and which museologists and museum directors have had to unravel as a result of the collusion between Joe Duveen and Bernard Berenson. So I'm just pointing that out as a fascinating manipulation of the market from an art historical point of view.
Take a question in the back. And I just want to bring a microphone down to the front to be ready here. Thanks.
I'd like to address the question to the three people on the right side, that is against the motion. Mr. Feigen and Mr. Hugh Williams made a number of quite specific assertions about the way auctions are manipulated and conducted and the way auction houses behave. And none of the three of you responded directly to those assertions. Could I ask you to do so?
I suppose I should take that one first as the auction house person on this panel.
Amy Capolazzo.
First, I would like to say the only area of the art world that is regulated is the auction business, funny enough. So the assertion on this side that the auction business, even Mr. Rosenkrantz in his comments in the beginning brought up the auction houses as somehow, being involved in something not entirely transparent or understandable. The truth is it's the only area that's regulated, and in fact, the entire market is Byzantine, and the only, little glimmer of transparency comes when you watch a live auction and watch something trade in real time. So you can sort of understand the depth of market, how many people might be bidding. You might not know who's bidding or what exactly is going on, but you might count there's 1, 2, 3, 4 telephones on that or what's going on. Certainly I don't think everything you're hearing on this panel, while they're saying part of what makes the art market susceptible to unethical behavior is the fact that it's unregulated. Nobody on this panel would cry for regulation. That would just be it's too small a market to care in most cases. I think that's really why we're not regulated. But also just from a sort of, New York would, Christie's would simply transfer me to London or Paris, cities that would make sure there was no regulation and we would, I would be relocated over there and New York would have no real trading floor by which to operate that way.
Wasn't that the claim when the question, probably before Amy, before you were born, but I remember
Richard
back
Feigen.
In the, was it the 60s or 70s, when the issue was brought up about chandelier bidding.
Right.
Okay? And they threatened, the auction houses threatened to leave New York City if they passed any regulation against this phantom bidding, which is designed to make people think there's a competitor.
Just so you know, for the purpose of the audience, I'll explain what chandelier bidding is, which is the auctioneer is allowed to bid on behalf of the seller up to the reserve price. So the point of an auction is that sort of canter and lively chatter that goes on where he goes, 100, 150, 200, 250, and you have to get a little momentum going. You can't say, we're opening the bidding at 600. Anyone? No, no, boom, it's over. So the auctioneer is allowed to bid on behalf of the seller and take bids, whether they exist or not, until they get close to the reserve price. That's part of the dance of the auction, part of the momentum, part of the theater.
That's
that
what I was told.
It
was theater. Right. But when I said, if I want theater, I'll go down either to off Broadway.
You'll go to Broadway, and you'll have a little theater. Okay. I get it. Right. Exactly. Beautiful. You'll have a little theater that way. You know, the auction is an ancient form. It's not something we invented in this format. It's been around for thousands of years.
No, Amy, I don't think that the chandelier bidding existed in early years when I started out. All I know is
they also didn't print estimates, and it was entirely dealers in the room.
Amy,
so
when a new buyer comes along and he doesn't have the knowledge of the market or of values, he goes to auction. And why? Because it gives him a measure of value. Now, he goes in there and he bids. If he thought that his bid could not get the object because the reserve is higher and the bidding was fake, he wouldn't bid. But they make him think because they say, oh, there's a bid over there, there's a bid over there, there's a bid on the telephone.
Look,
all this is your drama. All this is your theater. But the fact is, it is meant to deceive that buyer into thinking he has a competitor when he really doesn't. And
look,
so if all...
Listen, I'm not sure I can take on auction as a format. It's an ancient method of selling, and it's really, I'm not sure someone walks into Feigen Gallery and has a fabulous experience of transparency when they're told what the price is on something. Or, you know, in the case of auction, there's a printed estimate. There's sort of a lively public discussion about why that might be the estimate. There's a lot of people that novice collector can go ask and find out why the estimate is this. There's all sorts of databases they can search. There's a lot of self-education someone can do.
So are you telling me that he shouldn't bid until he gets up to the low end of the estimate?
I would tell him all the time what the strategy is. The auctioneer can take bids to get the sort of rhythm going until he hits the reserve price.
Chuck Close.
The reserve price can be at the low estimate or lower.
Chuck Close.
If you want it, be ready.
Anyone who knows me knows I'm not a big fan of auction houses. I'm sorry, Amy. But not for these reasons and not for the reasons that are part of a kind of arcane business practice that I don't think very many of us know or care about. What bothers me is that all an auction price means is that there were two people there that night who thought that that's what it was worth. And that's what's destructive in the art world, because a dealer will look at the artist's career and know that he or she cannot ask the most they can possibly ask for that painting that day, because it's going to screw up that artist's career for years to come.
Look, a work of art is only worth what someone can ask for it until it resells. Then you know what it's really worth.
No, you don't know what it's really worth.
From
you
a financial standpoint, from a monetary standpoint.
You know that two people that night thought that that was what.
Look, these are thinly traded markets, but so are the markets for commercial real estate,
nuclear
reactors,
rocket
ships. These are also thinly traded markets.
We're going to go to another question from the audience, sir.
Thank you.
And remember to hold that mic pretty close. That's good.
Thank you very much. To return to the question itself, it seems self-evident that because of the absence or the limited amount of regulation that the potential, as opposed to the practice in the art market, is far greater for unethical behavior, as Adam Lindemann was pointing out. So I think that the answer hinges more on what sorts of people are drawn into the art market as opposed to the stock market. And Jerry Salt said something very interesting earlier about how he thought that the people in the market might be missing a chromosome. The same chromosome.
Art dealers, I thought, were all missing the same chromosome.
Okay, now, I don't know. Is that the same chromosome that is missing in the stock market?
No.
People involved in the stock?
Can I take that different as your question? It's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, we see your point. So do you want to take that, Jerry?
Very quickly, that's Jason Kaufman, a very good writer. I'm going to say that I don't... Look, of course there's unethical behavior in the art market. I want to go back to this question. I would never say there isn't. I mean, I'm sure people want to make money. But if just because there is unethical behavior, I ask you, is its behavior less ethical than the stock market? I'm again asking for your better angels to understand that, of course, this exists. So the second you feel like, oh, God, yeah, there's people manipulating the prices, well, that's true. I don't think our side is arguing against that idea. But we're saying that's not what it is. That does not become the definition of it and make it worse than the worst thing that's happened in the United States in 45 years, for God's sake. If you really want to make that comparison, whoa, you really hate the art world. You think we are really Khomeini or something. Which is fine.
Question from the rear.
It'd be sadistic to be here.
Does the panel feel that, in fact, it's debating a issue that's not a debate? That basically, are you voicing that we're really talking about people and whether the people are in the stock market, whether in the art market, whether in the garbage market? It really doesn't matter. The question of what is ethical behavior as an individual in whatever market you're in would seem to be the, can I say, the basic premise that going here is all manufacturing. And I don't hear enough people talking about the fact that they're really on one side or the other, and that you're really struggling with the same issue of it's a personal matter. And you can have good ethics, bad ethics, any place. It's really a personal question. It's not a question of regulation. I'm sorry, I'm going on.
I think that's a really excellent question. I'll cut you off because we get your point. But Adam, that sounds like
we don't agree with you. We are for this proposition. We want to win the debate. They are against. So we're not all together here. We're for the proposition. They're against. So if you agree with us, you want to vote over here. That being said, it was very interesting that Richard was saying something against the auctions. Chuck was chiming in. And so I feel obliged to say something for the auction houses, just to balance it out here. Remember, if something sells at auction, somebody bought it. That is a fact. Doesn't matter if they chandeliered it, doesn't matter if they advertised it, I don't care if they shined it with shoe polish. Somebody bought it, and we can actually see that. That is not possible in the private market. So, for better or for worse, this market wouldn't exist without the auction houses, and we need them as collectors, I think as dealers, and I think artists often don't understand that, you know, the auction market, the auction house actually makes this a market and is ultimately to everyone's benefit.
Question from the far back.
As a lawyer who defends other lawyers who get into ethical trouble, and actually, yes, it's not an oxymoron, attorney ethics. The question is, we have rules. You can't lie, you can't steal. There are actually defined rules. Why can't everybody on this panel just agree that, in fact, you do need a set of rules that define what you can and can't do within your own industry?
Can I ask you then, I will answer your question in the form of a question.
But I don't know
if that's bad. I have a painting here I say is worth $1,000. How are we going to put a rule on that?
Professor Charles Wolfram said it's puffery. There is a subjective view. However,
the moment
I ask you the question, do you have a valuation in your bag for less than that amount? If you do and you say you don't, that is a false statement, and therefore it is sanctionable.
I could never go to trial. Because I kind of lost you. All I know is that I just sold one of these for $1,000 this morning, and this is by the same woman, and it's $1,000. And there's no rule on that. There is no rule. You could sell it for $1,200, which is fine with me, or you could sell it for $800 if you decided to discount it now that the economy is a little... It's fine. There should not be rules in this. Not the rules you're looking for.
But shouldn't there be black and white rules regarding what you can?
This
and
is
can't
not
do?
An age of certainty,
yeah,
my friends.
The black and white rules are take care of the art.
We're in
custodian.
An age of uncertainty. That's again. Like the Renaissance.
Amy Capilato.
We do have rules. We have very strict rules.
What's
on authenticity, when I make an invoice out and it says this is by Pablo Picasso, it is, and if it's proven otherwise,
yes.
Then I am subject to penalties.
Of course.
If I say this is oil on canvas and it's something else, if I say it's this size and it's that size, we have rules.
Yes.
And if anybody has a problem, they go to the Art Dealers Association of America and complain, and Feigen gets blasted. I mean, I have very strict rules, and we have very strict codes of ethics. What I'm saying is that...
So you're ethical.
Well, yes,
okay.
We're ethical.
That's what.
But I don't believe in lying.
Me neither.
And so I don't believe in saying that this guy over here bid when he didn't, or it was the chandelier bidding against some poor innocent guy that comes along and thinks he has a competitor. A man who pays $1 million for a painting because the underbidder said $950,000 and he figures his exposure is $50,000. That's his risk. He thinks there's a willing and able buyer at $950,000. What happens if the willing and able buyer was the chandelier?
That would be unethical.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the head-to-head section of our debate. We only have a few minutes left. I want to remind you where we are. We are going to hear closing statements shortly from each of the panelists. You were polled when you came in this evening. With the motion, the art market is less ethical than the stock market, 32% of you were for this motion, 30% were against, and 38% were undecided. We will poll you again shortly, but we now want to have closing statements of 2 minutes each from each of our panelists, beginning with artist Chuck Close arguing against the motion.
It was not me, but Dave Hickey, who said works of art have no intrinsic value. All their value is extrinsic. It is invested from without and over a period of time. And that is the truth. It's not the reason it can't be regulated is it's a kind of consensus, a consensus that's formed between art critics and art dealers and art historians and artists themselves. You can hype something for a while. You can spin it. You can try and produce... you can try and put it up for auction and manipulate it that way. But finally, the art world is not hog futures. When you lose money in the stock market, as I just did, I'm not going to hang my stock certificates on the wall. If I bought something I like and no one else in the world thinks it's worth anything anymore, I at least have something I like. And that is what makes it different from other kinds of investments. You can't just look at it as hog futures or pork bellies or anything else. It is ruled by passion, and it is a consensus that's formed amongst art world professionals of all kinds, and most important, by artists themselves. And you can manipulate it up to a point. What good is trying to regulate it when it is a self-correcting process? When the hype and everything else falls away, you'll be looking at the work, and if there is not support for that work, if the professionals in the field, those people who know it and care about it, whether they're in the auction houses, whether they're dealers, whether they're critics, or collectors or artists, that consensus is what forms value, and nothing else matters.
Thank you, Chuck Close. Making his summary statement for the motion, the art market is less ethical than the stock market, Richard Feigen, an art dealer and collector, founder of Richard L. Feigen & Company.
I don't quarrel with anything that Chuck says, except I do not believe that it addresses the point of this debate. I believe that nothing else has much intrinsic value than art. I don't believe in anything else. I don't believe in green pieces of paper that they print in Washington ad infinitum to the trillions of dollars. I believe in art. However, there is an art market. This was created by the press publicizing these huge prices and by the financial institutions who are lending money on it, who have set up departments to advise their clients on buying art, it has become, it has been transformed, metastasized into a financial market. And because it is a financial market, for better or for worse, although I would prefer that it were not, because I am passionate about buying art, I'd rather buy it, and this makes it more difficult for me and more expensive for me. The fact is that it is a financial market. And as such, it is totally unregulated. And in my view, things go on in this market that could not happen in the securities markets. People would go to jail. Okay, you can't pretend that there's a buyer when there isn't. There's no transparency at all. And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying to regulate the prices of art, because that is between the artist and his dealer, as Chuck says. But the fact is, nobody is saying something that's not true. I'm saying that in the auction market, and I agree that auctions are indispensable to establish values and for people that want to go in and acquire art, in that market, there is no transparency, and there is deception, deliberate deception, and I do believe that it ought to be regulated, that this kind of activity. Now, I wish all of you to vote for what our position here.
Thank you, Richard Feynman. Summarizing against the motion, Amy Capolazzo, Deputy Chairman and International Co-Head of Postwar and Contemporary Art at Christie's.
Phil, it's very important to address Richard directly here in his clear dislike of the auction houses. Richard, if it weren't for the auction houses bringing liquidity and transparency, what you would do all day would be a mere curiosity. So the market depends on the liquidity and transparency that the auction houses bring. And remember that the area of the market you're calling the most unethical or potentially corrupt is the only area that's regulated, in fact. So positively, I make the proposition that this is way too specific an argument, that auction is an ancient art form and a completely legitimate way to sell something in the world. And there's a sort of ancient rhythm and dance to auction that people seem to accept and understand. And there's many ways for consumers to become informed. To go back to the proposition, I think my hypothesis is anybody who signs up for the art world signs up to participate by a certain set of values and ideas about how we look after and take care of the art. I mean, some of us are compensated well, but no one's in it for the dough. There is definitely another motive to be involved. And art exists with this larger art world that is the kind of moral and ethical conscience of what the market does. If you don't have street cred in Seoul, you ain't going to go very far in the art market. So I argue the proposition that, in fact, the art world is at least as ethical as the stock market, if not vastly more so, that individual people are unethical in their behavior, and we all know them in every single industry, and the system of the art world, in fact, stands to be potentially more ethical because there are all sorts of various motives to be involved, but primarily it's for the love of the art itself.
Thank you, Amy Capolazzo. Summarizing for the motion, Michael Hugh Williams, founder of the Albion Gallery.
I wanted to remind you the idea that regulations are what force ethics, and in an unregulated market like the art market, it is hard to force people to adhere to ethical principles. Without ethical principles, however, and with the manipulations of market, we can look, for instance, to the tulip market in 1636. We create bubbles, and these bubbles are intrinsically unhealthy. You may all know Charles Mackay's extraordinary book, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. People follow each other because they feel that there are financial opportunities, especially when these markets are unregulated. The tulip market crashed, but it was regulated by the Dutch government rather too late. But the point here is that the art market is unregulated. It is open to unethical behavior because it's unregulated. Not how often is it unregulated, but the fact that it is intrinsically unethical because it is, as I said before, it is not regulated, it is not transparent, and there are, most importantly, absolutely no barriers to entry so that anybody may come in and manipulate the market whether we like them or dislike them, whether we admire them or not, is absolutely irrelevant. The important point here is to remember that the market is intrinsically open to manipulation and intrinsically unethical. Whether it's actually happening or not is not important to the debate tonight. What is important is to understand that the market is intrinsically unethical.
Thank you, Michael Huberman. Summarizing against the motion, Jerry Saltz, columnist and art critic for New York Magazine.
Art first, everything else follows. There has been an art market since the Renaissance. Right now, we just finished a time of the biggest art market on the face of the earth. And now that art market is contracting. And in the coming years, a lot is going to change. Things will herniate out, other dealers, critics, collectors, etc., that we can't yet see. I would say that art is a way of knowing the world and a way of knowing yourself. The art market became content for the art world. It's content for a lot of you right now. That I want you to vote for our side, for us. But also for you, if I can say something that egotistical, because if you're only seeing art for its value and saying that it's, of course it's going to be unethical, the people that buy and sell it, that almost goes without saying. But is it really more unethical than what's going on out there? Real pain, real serious stuff, world-changing economic stuff. If you think that, then you really, I just want to say, when you go to an art gallery or a museum, that could be in your way, that you think that all of this is unethical, that unethical. Yeah, it's unethical, but no more than you are.
Thank you, Jerry Saltz. Finally, summarizing for the motion that the art market is less ethical than the stock market, Adam Lindemann, an entrepreneur and a major collector of contemporary art.
Thank you, John. Jerry, I just want to say to all of you over there, I do feel for you, and I'm with you, but, of course, I'm with my teammates here, and I appreciate the difficult time you've had tonight. And I love everything that you said, you know, but a minute 30, okay. The art is based on two things, as far as I can tell. And Jerry said, we're all learning on the job. And you know what, I couldn't agree more. I'm learning right now. But the two C's are consensus and confidence. And these are the things that the art market is built on. So what makes a great artist? It's sort of this Platonic concept. Is there such a thing as great art? Perhaps, but in whose mind? The thing that makes art valuable is consensus. What makes Picasso Picasso? Because everyone thinks he's great. Someone thinks he's crap, and that doesn't really matter because people are still paying a lot of money for it. So consensus is what makes the art market, and then we need that extra thing that often the auction house brings, a dealer can bring, which is confidence. And those are the two things that make us feel comfortable with art being valuable. The reality is, though, that the ethical side is up to the individual that you're dealing with. There's no way to guarantee that anything is worth anything. And so when we're speaking in terms of Dave Hickey's intrinsic and extrinsic value, the intrinsic value of art is perhaps infinite, but the extrinsic value is really something that is almost impossible to measure on any given day.
Thank you, Adam Lindemann. And thank you to our panelists who have now concluded their portion of the evening. So here's what's going to happen next over the next 3 or 4 minutes. We're going to have you vote again. I'm going to take a minute or two to talk to you about our upcoming debates, and then we'll have the results. So to remind you, our topic is the art market is less ethical than the stock market.
Coming in off the street, 32% of you supported this motion, 30% were against, 38% were undecided. We decide the winner by the side that moved most people, that changed most minds and changed their numbers most significantly. If you are for the motion now, press number 1. If you are against the motion, press number 2. If you remain undecided, press number 3. So, does anyone need more time, or can we lock it out? We'll give you 15 more seconds. Okay, here's what I'd like to tell you. Our next debate is Tuesday, the 17th of March. The motion will be blame Washington more than Wall Street for the financial crisis. Panelists for the motion are Neil Ferguson, professor of history at Harvard University and senior researcher fellow of Jesus College, Oxford University, John Steele Gordon, an author and commentator specializing in business and financial history, and Nouriel Roubini, a professor of economics and international business at the NYU Stern School of Business. Panelists against the motion are Alex Berenson of the New York Times, Jim Chanos, the founder and managing partner of the short-selling investment firm Kynikos Associates, and Neil Minow, editor and co-founder of The Corporate Library, an independent corporate governance research firm. This debate, I want to remind you, as well as all of our spring season, will take place here at the Rockefeller University's Caspary Auditorium, and all of our debates, including this one, can be heard now on more than 170 NPR stations across the country. You can check your local NPR member station listings for the dates and the times of the broadcasts. And finally, copies of books by Richard Feigen and Adam Lindemann, as well as past debates on DVD, are on sale in the lobby. We've had a very significant movement in the results. Reminding you, before the debate, 32% were for, 30% against, and 38% undecided. As you can see, 55% are for, 33% against, 12% undecided. The side for the motion carries the debate. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us.